All right. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the Pog State. I'm Atlas. I am joined, of course, by LS, as per usual. And this is an exciting one because, of course, the LCK has finally wrapped up. You know, as far as the major regions are concerned, we were the third, and we were the third 3-0. So, LPL, we're looking at you. We're going to need that 3-0 as they're still in semifinals. I think that's happening today. Of course, it's already happened for you guys. But congratulations to Top Esports for making it into the final. Their match against IG was very exciting. Ellis, did you catch any of the LPL playoffs?
I just watched tidbits of one of the games from yesterday. But aside from that, no. I'm planning to live view the finals next week.
Oh, nice. I could be involved in that, to be honest. That sounds like fun, because that final is going to be sick. Of course, I think it's Knight's first final for Top Esports.
Mm-hmm.
That's it's pretty exciting. That guy touted as being one of the best mid laners in the world and still just hasn't been to Worlds or anything like that. So very excited to see what he's going to be capable of in that final. But this is about the LCK, and I do owe you guys a bit of a disclaimer. This is, of course, not representing the views or anything like that of Riot Korea or the LCK. That's why we are able to say whatever the heck we want. We can even have discussions about, you know, rules about bans being removed and things like that if we would like to. Although, personally, I don't really want to open up that can of worms again. My Twitter exploded on that day and was absolutely awful. Also, make sure you remember to follow us on everything. Of course, our Twitter is at Pogstate. I am at Atlas TV. This guy is at LSXYZ9, as per usual. Shut up. Don't say anything. Don't say anything. I know you want to. You can catch this podcast on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Buzzsprout, Google, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio. We have all of the links pinned on our Twitter. That's, in fact, where I just read it from. So you guys can go over there and experience the Pog State whichever way you want. And hopefully my earbud is going to stay in for the remainder of this podcast. So that will do it for the disclaimer, thankfully. We got that one out of the way. The only thing we need to tell you otherwise is keep washing your hands, keep staying away from people, and try not to catch any nasty viruses, because, of course, that is still a big deal, and that is why we are here at home and not in some fancy studio or in the bathroom, as you guys are still waiting for. So with that out of the way, we get to recap the final. And LS, you were commentating the LCK final here, and in one word, could you sum up how that final made you feel?
One word? I guess surprised. There we go.
Surprised was not the... I'm surprised that that's the word that you chose, to be perfectly honest. The word that I would use would be brief.
That would be good. Yeah.
Very brief. I don't know whether it was... I think surprised makes some sense, because it wasn't what any of us were expecting. I thought Gen.G were going to turn up a little bit more. Do you think that the turmoil that we had at the beginning with, you know, T1 being a little bit late to LoL Park, losing their couple of bans, and then Gen.G subsequently losing the game, do you think that would have played a big part in how they were feeling for the rest of the series? Because it looked to me like their players weren't playing at the level that we were expecting them, with the exception of maybe Ruler, who was still looking pretty good.
I thought that they... I mean, the game one draft, fortunately T1 were on blue side for it, so I think blue side is infinitely less hit than, say, red side. And even with both the sides being the way that they are right now, there's so many power picks, and typically blue side teams don't actually ban some of the power picks away. It mostly comes down to just how you draft it out, because there's Senna, there's Aphelios, there's Varus, there's Kalista, there's a couple more picks, but
there's
Red Side,
Set, LeBlanc, Azir, Zoe as well. Like, there's lots of stuff.
Right. So T1, realistically, out of all those champions that we listed, the onus is more so on Red Side to ban away some of these champions, and even if they don't, there's still options. I think that I think that the loss of the two bands in this particular series, also relative to the color that T1 was, wasn't super impactful. But then as like a follow-up, there were obviously some people on Twitter. I was vocal about it on the cast. I think that it was very akin to like the Fnatic G2 series in that the drafts were really gross. And the edges that T1 had in the series were, I mean, it's really strong. And I think that we were very vocal about this in a couple of the first few episodes. I know that I talked about it on stream with some pro players in the last couple of days since the final ended. And I mean, the general consensus is, you know, the team comps are really gross. So if random stuff just doesn't go completely wrong, then you're going to have a bad time.
Yeah. Or you're just going to have a really good time if you're the one that's able to pick up those particular compositions. I want to talk about the draft a little bit more, because the game 2 draft for me felt like Gen G had their heads in the right places, you know, like the idea was decent, spotting out the fact that they were dealing with a Varus that was doing a bajillion damage and there was nothing they can do about it. Like, what do you do to that? You pick a dive comp, like, for example, Jarvan and Galio being pretty perfect for that. They pick up these champions. They've got a self-sufficient AD carry in Ruler on his Ezreal, which has often been a very good pick. And then, like, T1 crushes them anyway, even though they have sort of won that rock, paper, scissors when it comes to team composition. I think that was sort of like the last nail in the coffin for Gen G. It felt like after that point, they were like, well, I guess we can't do anything now. And they subsequently had to just ban the Varus, and then they were beaten straight up. Like, I think that it was a sad series, because if that game 2 had have gone differently, I think it could have been a really epic one. It just didn't quite work out.
Yeah, game 2 was the closest, I think, of the three in terms of how it comes out the gate. And just on a mechanical level, I mean, I think the entire day, everyone on a mechanical level, except for Rascal in games 1 and 2, I think that they all looked really, really, really off on the side of Gen G. So,
apart from Ruler, I mean, Ruler in game number 1 was performing pretty well, but he was a Felios against massive poke damage and wasn't really allowed to play the game. When he did, he played pretty well, but that's not going to win you a game. So, yeah, was a little bit disappointing, and you could imagine that. Especially here with the way Korea is when it comes to pride and things like that. Like, if you're given an advantage, like having two extra bans over your opponent in game number 1 and then lose, the amount of tilt that you feel, I think, is even more prevalent. So I felt like they, A, had more pressure going into game 1, and B, were then brought down by the fact that they lost. And so, like, the whole losing the bans thing, I think, affected both teams, right? Because if T1 loses, then they're like, oh man, if we had bans, we would have been fine. And then that tilts them. But like, it just becomes so much more volatile on both sides. Like, the whole thing, it's, I don't know. I want to know what would have happened if we hadn't have had the ban issue at the beginning. Like, I don't know. I don't know what it would have changed, whether it would have changed anything. I think that the majority of us wanted to change our prediction to 3-0 T1 at the beginning of the day, regardless. Just because they'd looked so much better. We put in our predictions, I think, about 4 days prior to the final. And I personally had to think about it. I know you yourself were thinking that 3-0 is probably going to be more the course of action, just with how T1 have been playing. And the fact that, like, T1 go into this final after having a 2-0 match record against them in the regular split felt like they were really the Achilles heel of Gen G. Which is interesting, given the fact that this is the next finals rematch after what was the World Championship in 2017, where then Samsung Galaxy were able to steal it away. So I think it's a cool story, thinking about now this new iteration of T1 is so dominant over that squad. So that's cool, but I would have liked to have a few more games in the final, personally. Talking about the final outside of the games, though, holy crap, the intro was so sick.
The intro was good.
So sick.
Yes.
And I also, like, I loved, I tweeted about it, but I loved just how appropriate it was for the fact that we've not, we weren't allowed to have an audience or anything like that. Like, the way the final intro and the way everything was sort of done around the this sort of more social distancing style of final was just, I don't know, it was just done extraordinarily well. And I was very proud of the LCK. I kind of wish that we had have had some better match, better games, but
yeah,
everything outside of it was just so good. And I find it really interesting because the last final that we had, the summer final, the LCK got a lot of flack, right? Especially from the Korean community about, like, this is just not the final that we wanted. We didn't like X, Y, Z. Like, everyone was sort of coming down really hard. And this time around, like, even the Korean community is like, why the heck couldn't we have done this for the, like, the summer final? Like, we don't care about an audience. We just want to have, like, a good show. And yeah. I think it's really cool that we've found some redemption, at least on the production side, after this final. And I was, very proud to be a part of it, even if it was just on some funny little analyst desk.
That was good. The makeshift desk.
That was good. I think it was fun. I think, I don't know whether we necessarily nailed what we were trying to do, which was to, like, for me, who was, like, watching the games and listening to you guys, to have, like, your perspective added on top of what the Korean perspective was, which is Jisun sort of listening to the Korean cast and getting the analyst perspective and things like that. I don't know whether that necessarily worked, but I think it went okay. You know, it was all right.
Yeah.
But yeah, unfortunately, we only got to do two of them because, the games just, there weren't many of them. And
there,
also,
there was
breaking down games that have been largely lost in draft and early game is difficult, to say the least. Not something that I've had to do all that often. So yeah, I think that's enough about the final. I think we had a really interesting season though, and we had our predictions at the very beginning. I'm going to go over those after we have a little bit of a discussion about sort of some milestones that have come in. Like, it was a really cool split as far as, like, Faker getting 2,000 kills. Like, we have hit a lot of milestones in 2020 spring. Ruler hit 1,000 kills. Congratulations to him. Teddy as well. And BDD also. I believe now we've got 12 people in the LCK that have over 1,000 kills. And Faker, of course, the only person to have over 2,000. And Hybrid got 3 pentakills in
that
this
was
LCK split.
Record.
This is, like, the first time 3 pentakills has been claimed by one person in one split.
Yeah.
And there were also a lot of others. I think Ruler got a couple. And I think Mystic got one during the regular split anyway. Having a look. Yeah, Ruler got one. Ruler got two. Aiming got one. Mystic got one. And so on got one on his Jace, if we remember back. So pretty sick stuff as far as, you know, how our players were performing and getting themselves some awards.
Yeah, I think pentakills in general, this split, I think it was weird, the pentakill count, as well as there was some really close pentakills too. I believe Deft was actually really close to getting a pentakill once. And I think maybe even two of the series. And the other thing that was not I almost kind of bizarre was the amount of perfect games. This split was really weird.
There were some
really weird things that came out of the regular split in terms of they're not supposed to be very common occurrences, and yet they were much more common throughout the 90s.
Some of
series.
The DPM numbers as well, like that APK series with, like, the insane 65,000 damage done by two players on the one team. Like, that was absolutely insane too. I believe that was in their Genji series. Trying to remember back. Oh, I can't remember. I could probably figure it out if I went through and had a look, but to be perfectly honest, I don't know whether I can be bothered. We are going to be doing a Pogstate Awards ceremony as well, guys, that you are going to be able to have a part in as well. There will be a poll going live at the end of this episode if you are listening or watching it live, but if you've just tuned in and this is maybe you know, a couple of days old. I'm hoping that we're going to be able to have the poll open for as long as possible so that everyone can get their votes in. So go and check out the Pog State Twitter. There will be a poll there, and you will be able to vote for your player of the split. That will give you a few options, and then we'll see which one you guys do decide on. Because I think that, you know, the MVP of the split going to BDD, I think that was great. Regular season, he was fantastic, even if he didn't necessarily make it to the final. That's okay. His regular season was absolutely fantastic. I think the Young Player Award going to Carrier, absolutely fantastic. Would you contest that at all, Chovy fan number one?
Chovy fan, no, I think that one, I think that one's fine. I think okay, that good. One's, yeah.
We're allowed to confirm Carrier as Young Player of the split. Yeah. Were there any of the awards that you didn't necessarily like? I can list them for you. Of course, we had the all LCK teams, 1, 2, and 3. We can discuss that a little bit later. Best coach went to Coach Kim. This one I thought was interesting, because how do you vote on best coach?
Yeah, this one pisses me off for a lot of reasons. I've been very vocal about this over the years. In order to do, like, best coach award just always leaves such a sour taste in my mouth. In order to do anything, it's all conjecture. You can't really know what's going on. And obviously, even during, like, officially sanctioned interviews and whatnot, you can't really know what's going on there. So, and what I mean by that is, like, if they're on, like, the Riot broadcast or something, and they're giving an interview or they're giving comments, of course they're not going to say anything. Now, I'm not saying that T1 in particular, I'm just saying people in general are not going to say anything. But coach of the split, like, it feels like a meaningless award if we're always giving it to someone that just happens to be at top of the standings. Like, you have no idea what can go on inside of a team or who is really carrying. And I'm not trying to take away anything from this, but, like, I think that things that break the meta or break the walls are probably often being, well, even that is conjecture, right? But there's, I know in the Reddit thread and on Twitter, there were a lot of people that were very vocal about just people ending up at the very tops of Coach of the Split Awards simply because their teams are winning.
The thing that I'm thinking of is, like, how are we supposed to decide who the best coach is when we're not sitting there in draft and listening to who's making decisions, right? Because a lot of teams, it's still the players that are making the majority of those calls as to which, like, champions to play. I think a DRX example would be CVMax gives a list of options to his players and says, like, which one of these would you like to play in this circumstance? But often it's about, like, matchup. It's not necessarily about what his vision is for the team composition. And I think that it's really difficult for us to make a decision based on like, actual facts of who's done the best coaching. We just have to look at, like, oh, who did the most winning?
Right. I don't like conjecture based awards at all. I think that they're very I don't know. I think was the, like, I remember messaging Yewon about that and basically voicing my complaints, because it's been something that I've been very vocal about over the last couple of years. Because so many times, because public perception, or I'm not even going to actually get into it. It's just, I don't know. Conjecture based awards just don't sit well with me.
Yeah. I like to think that, you know, the award is being given by someone with all the information. That's sort of where I'm sitting. So exactly right. Conjecture based. Let's not do it. So let's move on. Young player, of course, went to Carrier. We were okay with it. Regular season MVP does, of course, go to BDD. The finals MVP I thought was actually really interesting, because we had a unanimous vote for everyone outside of the English broadcast, because when I thought Teddy had probably one of his best finals runs that we've seen in a really long time. And Teddy, if we remember back, sort of was only half present when it came to Worlds last year. I think I personally was a little bit disappointed with what he was giving us during that tournament. But this time around, like, Teddy was uber consistent, and throughout the entire regular split as well. But he was doing everything that he needed to in the finals the entire way, and not necessarily doing it in a way that was, like, trying to be flashy. He was just so consistent. But everyone thought that Cuz deserved it, and I found it really quite weird.
Yeah, I thought that was really weird too. I remember talking to Valdez as I walked off the desk, wondering what actually happened. Generally, I think that I can understand how something went the way that it did. But in game two, the Varus arrows were so integral to so many things that went
and
off.
Game one.
Right. And so in game one as well, the Varus arrows were super important. Obviously, Cuz got ahead in that game, but he also lost Smite Fight a couple of times. Mm-hmm. A lot of his advantages that he accrued early was the opponents donking off, and I don't care that he's in the right position. That doesn't detract from the fact that his opponents are not playing up to par, and I think that all of that's relative, and I think that we've talked about this on the LCK broadcast in the sense that we try to comprehensively evaluate from start to finish what ended up happening. If the opponent was playing bad, that's going to detract from how well maybe you did. And it felt like Teddy was integral in so many of the parts. The Graves pick itself really did set him up for success as well. And I'm not saying that Cuz did bad. I think that actually he would have been second or third throughout the night. But even in the Olaf game, a lot of stuff ended up being started because of laners. And obviously, Olaf, you're sort of full clearing. There's a lot less pressure on the Olaf when you look at these lane matchups and whatnot. So a lot of freedom's granting over. And so it was the only thing that was weird to me is that it was 7 out of 9 in favor of jungle, right? With the only two being the English cast. And I can't wrap my head around that because I just felt like, what game are we watching? Not that he shouldn't end up winning it anyway. I just, why, how are there no votes anywhere else? That was really weird.
Yeah, I found it really weird, especially in like, I think it was game number one on his Graves where he like runs to an inner turret randomly at like 5 minutes into the game and dies. Like, I don't know. I think that like,
yeah, he donks off and dies. When he had a free. I don't know. Teddy was, not only did Teddy match him. So if we want to make the argument of who was contributing the most, Teddy matched him in KP. In game two, and then he had the highest KP in game three. Teddy,
and I think
on the affiliates.
Most damage in every game, right?
Yeah, and so I don't understand it. And again, it's not to say that Cuz can't get the series MVP. It's what was the basis? I don't know. That bothered me for maybe 10 minutes walking off. I think that was what I was thinking about on the way to... I was tilted. Yeah, I was actually tilted. And I don't know why.
I was a little bit frustrated. I thought like, that, you know, Cuz played really well also. So
yeah,
I don't think it's a huge deal. But still, I think it warranted a discussion. And now I'm going to move on to what warrants the next discussion. Because I want to talk about our all LCK team. Vote that did come in. This was, of course, based on the regular season, but I thought that some of these pickups were actually really interesting. Maybe the third one is going to be the best because I don't know how this happened, but it sort of makes sense in like a weird way. But I don't know. So the number one team of the top rated players in every position was Noggery, Clid, BDD, Teddy, and Carrier.
Oh, let me actually open this up. LCK Spring.
I can chuck you a link. Let me chuck you a link.
Yeah.
It's in it's in a group chatty thing.
Where? On Kakao or?
No, I put it on Kakao as well.
Okay, I found it. All right. The thing that was so bizarre about this to me is I know that several people tweeted at me that me and a handful of people were the only people that even listed Summit for top lane.
I know I did.
Yeah, so I'm gonna just control F Summit here. So you had him as third LCK team. And then Summit's next instance, so I had him high up, and then his next instance is by Tushin on fourth, and then third LCK team was by Keen, actually, himself. And then fourth LCK team was by Hanwha Life's coach. And then fifth LCK team was by the Sandbox coach, I guess. So maybe that one doesn't really count. And then APK coach. But this one was really weird to me. Because when you look at the top laners, it's mostly Nuguri. You had a couple of Kana votes. Rascal, Doran.
And the Doran votes, Keen. I thought, were really interesting.
There were So-on ones, too.
I think So-on deserves a look-in. Like, if Rascal's going to get in there, I think So-on should probably be there, too. I think you had a great second half of the split.
Yeah.
And if recency bias comes in, then it's worth a vote, right?
Yeah. The only thing that just struck me as so weird is the lack of Summit.
Yeah, and lack of Keen. I think, like, I would have put Keen over Doran, even though his team wasn't winning. Like, Keen's stats were unbelievable for a player that hasn't been winning, right?
Yeah.
Like, his CS difference at 15 stat was still first in the league when, like, the team doesn't even win. Like,
yeah.
How do you do that? That's insane.
It was definitely something. Because a lot of the players that are ending up on this list are just conveniently on the teams that are winning, and...
Yeah, I mean, the only one that's missing is Kana, right? And Kana is a rookie, so people are probably going to feel like it's difficult to vote for him. And if you judge by the final, didn't have the greatest series.
Yeah, Kana's on some of the people's lists, but the only thing that I would obviously highlight is, like, in terms of AD carry, I'm looking... I mean, there's some people that had hybrid. I mean, actually, I'm sorry.
I think I had hybrid.
Are we the only people that, like, put hybrid on this?
Can you link me, like, the one with all the people? Because now that we're, like, having a look at... I want to have a look now, too.
Yeah,
I didn't find that one. Link it somewhere. I've got both of them up.
There, yeah.
All right,
so,
nice.
Some people had hybrid, but I think it's mostly us, actually. Wait. No, BitDory and Lyra both had hybrid, but that's fourth LCK team. Like, this is I mean, aiming, Teddy, I mean, those are, yeah, Deft. And then hybrid starts to come in for fourth and fifth.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's some stuff that, again, it doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't resonate in my head. So I don't.
Actually, when it comes to hybrid, both Valdez and I had him as number one. And
really?
He was actually in a couple of people's lists. Like, Teddy put hybrid in as number one. And one of the media guys from Daily Esports chucked him in as number one, too. So at least there's a little bit of, synergy there.
There you go.
But perfect. Valdez was the one that put Doran as number one. So that's where all Doran's points came from. That was all Valdez.
It was all Valdez.
Mm-hmm, 100%. He's a bit of a shill, actually. He's got, like, Doran, Chovy, and Carrier. He's a big DRX fan.
The thing is, like, when I see stuff like this, I think back to, like, Teddy on Jhin Air, and I would just think, well, okay, would we say that he wasn't the best or one of the best ADCs in the world when he was on Jhin Air and he was losing? Because obviously that's not true. Or you think to BDD when he was on KT, and KT was just losing everything. Would you say that BDD is one of the worst? And it's like, no, of course not. So I don't know. Am I the only person that values, like, pro view and lane states that are devoid of, like, if the team is literally a barn fire? Because it's so weird for me to see some players just not even make the list.
Yeah, when Keen wasn't there on the top side of the map, I thought something was going wrong. I was the only one that put him as number one out of the casters, I think. But there were a couple of people, like Comet from T1 and Teddy both had Keen. Deft had Keen. Ruler had Keen. Lehens had Keen. And Nuclear had Keen.
Yeah.
So a bunch of the players had Keen, and then me out of, like, everyone else. as number one, and then you had him as number two, of course. But there were only a couple. Like CB Max had him as number two, like Viper. Who's this? Kesman from Hanwha Life also had him as two. So,
and there's no actual All Star games anymore, right? There's no like top Korean players versus.
I don't think
that doesn't exist anymore, right?
Yeah. At least not for spring. Like, you're not going to have All-Star until the end of the year regardless, so I don't know whether it matters for spring. I think this is more like a for fun thing, so it's not like a huge deal. But I think it's like a really interesting exercise to do, right? To like find out where everyone's head is as far as like who's strong and who's not. The other thing that we need to talk about is jungle, right? Like Bono picking up third. I mean, he did have a good split, right? But like I can't help but like think back, you know, to the beginning of the split where he's donking off completely, like diving turrets and getting murdered. Like he was a large reason why KT didn't finish much higher, because their very early season was pretty woeful, to be honest. And to think about like some of the junglers that then therefore don't get in, like you've got Cuz and Clid, who were both fantastic, right? So I think we can both agree that regular season wise, these two players deserve to make it in. But then Bono in third. I mean, I even think that, you know, as far as finishing off the split, Canyon played very, very well. I think he would be there in the conversation. But is it just that our jungle pool is so top heavy? Like, who do you think deserves that third spot? I don't even need to ask you. I can just look at it. Who did LS think deserved the... you had jungle... Bono in third. No, you had him at fifth.
I had
Canyon
Bono at
was
fifth.
Fourth. And Spirit, I think Spirit's a good choice.
I put Spirit at third. Jungle was definitely weird this time around. So obviously
it was a difficult
I'm using
one, right? Like I'm actually starting to think that maybe it was.
I was using mic checks as well as like asking myself like some of the stuff that they did throughout the split. I obviously have some thoughts on some of the votes pertaining to jungle, but I'm not going to say them.
Do you know what's funny? I'm talking about like this jungle list as being weird, but that was exactly what I voted for. So I need to call myself out here just for a second, because I guess it's not weird in Max's brain, but actually when things from my brain are exactly what happens, then I think most of us can realize that, hey, this is a bit weird. Because I don't, you know, often get things right. I'm, you know, the play-by-play guy.
Yeah.
And theoretically, that's it's going to actually mean that it's a little bit more strange. But it seems that a lot of other people had my similar weird thoughts about that one. I think mid lane was almost perfect. Having a look at who they were. Let's go to mid lane. BDD, Chovy, and Faker. I think Chovy and BDD could have been switched when we're talking about regular season, but I don't think by much. And of course, BDD did get MVP of the season.
Yep.
I think Chovy's last couple of games weren't super fantastic. He'd certainly popped off in the middle of the split, though. And then Faker picking up third, I think makes a heck of a lot of sense. I think he had a very consistent season. So I think mid lane is probably the easiest to say this is fine. Yeah.
Yeah, I think mid lane was the easiest to really evaluate, just based on how everything was going. Obviously, there is some interchangeable stuff that can go on there with Chovy, BDD, and Faker. So I think that's you know, much more of an easier conversation than some of the other roles.
Yeah.
It's more of a difficult conversation than some of the other roles, because you have to get into more nitty-gritty stuff, I think.
No, I agree. For reference, guys, my votes were Chovy, BDD, Faker, Kuro, and Showmaker, and our good friend Nicholas. His was Chovy, Faker, BDD, Kuro, and Showmaker. So we had the same players just mixed up just a little bit, right? So I think the top three, like... Having a look down the list, there are a lot of Fakers actually in first place, a hell of a lot of them in second. So I think Faker getting third is almost a surprise, but it was the fact that everyone was like, BDD and Chovy are 1 and 2, and we're just going to do that the entire time. So I think, yeah, some good stuff. And next is going to be the 80 carry spot, and I think this is where things get really strange. We've already discussed it a little bit with the fact that Hybrid wasn't on the list. That's very, very odd.
So 80 carry is I think Deft, Aiming, Teddy all should be on there. And I mean, I guess we have Ruler as well, but I just found it weird that it seemed like a pretty cut and paste of the last couple of weeks, just in terms of like stats.
Yeah, I think it was like
if
a little
you look
bit
at
of
every
recency.
Single list. Yeah, it's very I was expecting more diversity. I also don't know why Ruler doesn't get a lot of attention basically in anyone's lists until towards the end.
I'm trying to have a look at what I put down. I had like Hybrid, Teddy, Aiming, then Ruler and Deft.
Yeah. Ow.
I think Viper was worth a look in. I think he had a good season, but it was another one of the Keen Effect type situations where it's hard to vote for someone who's not on a winning team by the looks of things, based on these lists. But Viper did have a very good season. But Ruler not being up there is... That's interesting to me too. But I personally thought that Aiming, Teddy, and Hybrid had real pop-off seasons as far as like what we were expecting from them as players and the improvement that they made. But I don't think that's necessarily the criteria, right? So it's really interesting. Like, I assume everyone sort of came into these votes with a very different mindset of like, this is the reason why I'm voting for this person. Because like, you can be looking at it holistically, like who played the best, right? Even if it is up to expectation for the player, they were still the best, right? But I think a lot of what influenced my perspective on this was what we were expecting from the beginning of the split and what actually happened. And I think Hybrid was incredible based on expectation. I think Aiming was also performing extremely well based on expectation. So I think a lot of it was my initial expectation of what these players were going to do, and then did they exceed it and who exceeded it by the most. And I don't know whether that's necessarily correct, right? But that was just how I voted during this process. So do you think that that's like a reasonable way to vote for something like this? Like what was your criteria in your head of like who deserved it? Was it just purely based on their play during the games?
Well, I think mostly it's always just based on play during the games and individual prowess in certain spots and whatnot. I don't think that it's entirely just based on winning. So yeah, I'm not like looking at fifth, there obviously is a lot of diversity there. There's like Mystic, Vipers, Hybrids, Rulers, there's lots of votes that come out there. Fourth is sort of the same thing, and again, I mean, ultimately there's five potential picks for each person, right? So if you don't include subs, you're going to be getting half the league. So it's assumed that we should see people pop up, no doubt. But I was surprised that there wasn't a lot of diversity in first and second, first, second, and third picks. Because I think AD carry had more players than some of the other roles that could have been having more discussion. And so I was surprised to see it be as static as it was.
Now, I think that talking about support, I saved the best till last because I think this is the weirdest one for me. I think top two was absolutely fine. I think Carrier and Effort were fantastic. But Life being in third place bothers me a little bit because I think that shows that Tucson was a little bit overlooked this season. And I think that he performed extremely well. He has been for a really long time, but I find it very strange that Life was in the third place without Tucson being there. What was your take on the support votes?
So Carrier getting first, I think, was totally normal. And then let me look. Life and effort being up there, like this is one of those weird things where it's where is Lehens?
I mean,
Because
Lehens was
again,
second on my list and yours. I think we both
yes.
had Carrier Lehens. And then you
So
had Effort in third, and I had Tucson in third. So we
yeah,
just switched those around.
this is another one of those really weird things. Like we don't just put people because they're on winning teams. Like
Yeah.
that's a disservice. There was a tweet that garnered a bit of controversy yesterday. I'm not going to say who made it, but by basically talking about that, you don't just look at teams that are winning and then place a player at the top. Like, what are you looking at? You know, you don't
Yeah.
like this is actually a problem within League of Legends where public perception just shifts, or like comments just shift everything. And I feel like you're just doing a disservice unless you actually look at like what is happening. Because I don't know how Lehens is as absent as he is,
Yeah, no, I
you know,
agree. I think Lehens had
across
a
the entire spread.
fantastic
It's
season.
yeah, it's really, really strange. So that was the only thing that really stood out to me in terms of support. But it definitely support definitely has a lot more diversity overall.
Yeah. I mean, I think Life, I mean, he wasn't terrible this season, right? But he only played half the split, right? I think that Gen.G thought that Kellen was going to be a really good option for them. And so they didn't even have Life for like a lot of their games. And the fact that he got in at third when you had, you know, Lehens and Tucson both playing 100% of the split and also playing very well in the games that they won and lost, to be perfectly honest. I think Lehens was incredibly pivotal for Humble Life. I felt like he was also making a whole lot of the calls. I think that for me, Effort only really came into my mind after playoffs and in all of the pro views that we saw, because we saw so many more during the finals, which was super cool. But he was making almost all of the calls for the team. Like, it was really like it showed that he is sort of like the brains trust around a lot of what T1's fantastic macro was during that final. So I think that almost in like a retroactive way, I would have put Effort higher than what I voted for preliminarily, but I don't think that he was even necessarily worthy of second place, right, coming out of the regular season based on not having that extra information. And I think that we should assume that no one has that, right? Like, no one has, like, we know that this guy is the shot caller, so every movement that any of the players make that could be a team decision is now his decision, and therefore he must be the best, you know? Like, I don't think you're allowed to say that when you're voting for something like this, even if you have the inside information. I think that it needs to be about individual play when you're talking about like a dream team scenario, if that makes sense. So there's a lot of things that sort of come into it, which is like really, really interesting. But anyway, that is that. I don't know whether you can hear my cat meowing like
I
crazy
can.
outside. Should I let him in? Maybe I'll let him in. Let me scooch for a sec.
Perfect.
Sorry about this, everyone. He was just really, really loud. So I was just about to segue anyway. So I don't know whether Ian, if you wanted to like cut all of that or whatever, that's totally fine. But now we'll move on to some more theoretical stuff. So we're talking about like theoretical best teams and these votes and all that sort of stuff. We're doing some naming and shaming, and now we're going to talk about a theoretical MSI. And LS, I'd be interested to hear your sort of. I think I've spoken to you about this many times throughout this season, sort of talking about like what your opinion is on the strength of the LCK at the moment. And I'd like to know what you think about like our number one team, which is now T1, moving into an MSI that has teams like Cloud9, like G2, and one of. Let me quickly have a look at who's going to be there. It'll be Top Esports and then one of JDG or FPX coming out of the LPL. So one of those three teams will be there. For you, what would be your sort of like top four in MSI? I haven't actually done a lot of extra research on a lot of the other regions as well, because of course, no MSI, no real need to to do a lot of that research at the moment. So we are going to do it theoretically with just sort of the four major regions at the moment. But where would you sort of put LCK in amongst the teams that have so far qualified?
I would probably put them top two as it stands. Yeah, I would probably just say that they're probably top two. I know that some of the teams that most likely would be there, right, is the LCL winners. I actually watched that yesterday.
Yeah,
I got asked to do the English broadcast for that.
I was actually trying to look in on that, but I think I was a little bit late and I didn't quite get there. I think you were doing something else instead at that point. How did that go? Tell us about it.
So it was Unicorns of Love versus ROX, and something happened game one where the initial English broadcast didn't have delay, and so it had to be remade because there was no delay. Unicorns of Love had won. And then in game two, there was a draft win, and then game three was an even bigger draft win. And the game two, ROX really, really threw it away. They were really far ahead, and they just donked off. In wildcard-esque fashion, from what I would remember from yesteryears, I think that wildcard teams overall have improved a lot in the last couple of years.
Well, I mean, theory, like, LCL was always one of our sort of top three.
Yeah.
As far as the emerging regions were concerned. And Unicorns of Love had a decent Worlds as well in 2019. So did you have any sort of inkling that they look better now moving into the 2020 season? Do you think that this is a team that has become better?
I think, like, from watching that series, it looked very one-sided. I don't know how the two teams were, like, leading up to that final, but it looked like a very grossly one-sided finals. Just watching the overall gameplay. But again, segueing back to if there was a, you know, a hypothetical MSI, I imagine it would be... So out of the four major regions, I think Cloud9 would just be fourth. I don't think that they would be favored against any of the top regions. And I say that not because Cloud9 isn't doing well, but because comprehensively NA is very weak. So it's really hard to evaluate, especially because a lot of the games are very skewed. And what I mean by skewed is, like, they are... Cloud9 has a lot of freedom in a lot of the games, and a lot of things are never really challenged in many ways. So obviously all the finals were really lackluster. I think that Fnatic versus G2 and T1 versus Gen G were similar levels of badness in terms of, like, draft.
And disappointing, right?
And disappointment.
I felt like, they followed a very similar script.
Yes.
When it came to, like, the draft situation, it was like Fnatic not respecting certain picks and thinking that they can counter them, and then not being able to, and then being at match point and then losing.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it sort of felt like for both regions, right? Like, Gen G did exactly the same thing.
Yep. I'm pretty sure that, like, inside of Morello on its pages are just, like, screenshots of the drafts throughout spring 2020. I'm pretty sure that's what the fuck... I'm pretty sure that's why it applies Grievous Wounds.
Yeah, and that's exactly why Deft was able to insta-kill... who was it? Was that... it was Teddy. He was able to insta-kill Teddy with it the other day because it just... The weight of so many terrible drafts coming down on your head. Oh, no. Danger. So
that's pretty much it. I think... I don't want to say it's impossible for G2 to take games, and obviously people will reference Worlds, and then I would re-reference to look back at the Worlds games in context, like with the drafts, in mind, because I was obviously very vocal about them, and even live viewing. I think the way the meta is right now, there are still center team compositions that do exist, but I think that they're more difficult to come by, and often we just get scaling versus infinitely better scaling in a lot of the more recent series, and it creates a very big mountain to climb. But I think that that's much easier than just scaling versus center if games are stable. I think it would end up being Korea and China at the very top. So for MSI, I would imagine that Korea and China are obviously the top, and I think that's just, I don't think it's impossible for either to lose. I mean, Korea and China both lost last year at MSI. It was a NA versus EU final, so obviously that was unexpected.
Severely.
I don't think that sort of a thing would end up happening again, and I don't think any wild card regions would probably do anything.
I do want to talk about G2 versus T1. I think that is going to be the main point of contention as far as people listening to this podcast is concerned. Don't worry, we hear you, EU fans. To go down the line as far as T1 versus G2 are concerned, like, I think that there are certain ways that G2 could attack T1. So what in your mind puts T1 ahead?
Well, I think the current iteration of G2 is weaker than last year with Caps in bot lane and Perks in mid.
Okay.
So I think that that's an issue. I think that the meta, again, it's more suited to... Now, I think everyone's awful at drafting, for the most part. I think most people arrive at draft wins by chance, rather than by, you know,
by
being
design.
Cognizant of what's happening. Yeah, by design. I think that even when draft wins occur, though, the last couple of weeks, we've had it mostly be scaling versus just superior scaling. Not just outright sinner versus scaling insurance policy. And I know that a lot of people tell me to watch LPL. I know that I haven't watched LPL. Apparently, they just sin all the time over there. from the gameplay I watched yesterday, I saw a Leona Zenith Blade in at level 3 and just die straight up 2v2 for no reason whatsoever. And then I saw a Trundle 3 camping and running around. So I don't know what I'm supposed to look forward to at the finals. Because it just seemed like it was extremely high variance in the one game that I watched. But that never tends to happen at like world stages. Generally, everyone tends to tighten up because variance is just not something that you want to really go with.
Yeah, true.
So I think that drafts by nature are more... They are super, super important, but I think that even in those kind of... losses, the way that they've been happening globally, I think that it's still better than some of the draft losses that we saw at Worlds. So I don't know. How does G2 end up winning? I think draft victory and then Caps not being on a traditional AD carry is probably one of the obvious ways. I think that T1's biggest edge probably just comes up in top lane.
Okay.
Or not... G2's biggest edge comes up in top.
Yeah,
lane.
That's what I sort of thought. I thought versus counter could be a point of contention that T1 would have to play around.
Yeah.
That could be a tough
pretty
one.
Much that.
Okay. Well, we'll see whether it actually happens at Worlds. It's not going to happen at MSI because, of course, there is no MSI. So, RIP, that's very unfortunate. However, I'm glad that everyone's staying safe. It would have been absolutely impossible to get everyone out there anyway. I know, for example, if we had an MSI, there wouldn't be an OS team there because no one can leave the country. So, yeah just would have been impossible. So, you can understand why it was cancelled, but it's just still sad that it was just something that we have to deal with as a sign of the times. So, let's just try and make the most of it, much like as we discussed, the LCK final did. I was very, very proud. Again, still proud. Now it's time to move forward. This is going to be the last section of the podcast. I know it's already gone on fairly long. But I do want to start off our own Pogstate Awards. I want us to award our player of the season. That includes playoffs and regular season. We will vote for it right here, just the two of us. We're going to also vote for our top 3 1v9 award between the two of us, and then I want you guys at home to give your Pogstate vote for the most impressive player of LCK Spring 2020, and we are going to provide you with 4 players to choose from, and then it's up to you to tell us which one of those was the most impressive in 2020 with whichever criteria you want. Honestly, I think it's going to be really interesting to just throw out four names and see who's going to stick. So just most impressive in your opinion is going to be the vote there. So I'm going to start off with who you thought your player of 2020 spring was, Ellis.
Like my MVP for 2020 spring?
Yeah. And like that's all inclusive of playoffs and regular season.
I mean, there's only one answer here, Atlas. There's only one answer.
Well, I mean, you still have to say it.
I think it's Chovy. See, I'm in this really weird phase where it's like I don't even want to, like, I'm in this really weird spot where I don't even want to say what I really think anymore because I'm just so tired over the last few months. It's getting really annoying. Like, I obviously think Chovy, but I feel like the reasons that I think Chovy, just, I don't know. I'm like pausing to really think. Obviously, I want to say Chovy, but I think I'm growing tired of the explanations.
Faker, right?
I could just say Faker, so people shut up. It's getting really annoying, you know.
That would work.
You know, it's just it's getting really sad. I'm getting really strung out and burnt out, I think.
I think you're allowed to say Chovy though. I think Chovy had probably one of the best all around splits that we've seen. Was even able to play well against Faker when the team was being dismantled. I thought that he didn't necessarily have his greatest performance in that best of five, but it was much better than the Chokey of old, right? Like, we didn't see... He wasn't allowed in
to the DRX house.
He had a few Chokey moments, but I don't think that it was an example of, like, exactly the Chokey expectations that we've had. Because he's just been absent from finals in the past, right?
Right.
It was really... a much bigger situation.
Yep.
I think that Chovy would definitely be up there for me. I think it's a really difficult award to give out as far as like most valuable player on any team throughout the entirety of 2020, because I think it does include a lot of our players that were sort of stuck on a team that was losing a lot, but they still had great performances. But that's going to be our next award. So I'm trying to separate this from that exact situation, right? Mm-hmm. I think the only other real option in my mind, there's a couple. I think Carrier was just brilliant overall. But I also thought that Teddy was just so incredibly consistent throughout the entire split. Like, his CS numbers against everyone that he was playing against, the fact that he was so flexible with the champions that he was playing as well. I mean, busting out the Cassiopeia and things like that and being able to play that to a high level, as well as all of his AD carries that he's always been so good at.
Mm-hmm.
I think for me, I have to give it to Teddy. And if you put that, you know, on top of his finals performance as well, I know there's a bit of recency bias there, but going through the stats, like, Teddy was just pretty out of control when it came to form. And it's not necessarily like getting the flashy things. Like, he wasn't one of the pentakill players or anything like that, but he was just really good every game. And I think that's what wins you tournaments, right? That's what will get you to Worlds and win Worlds. If you're just playing at a really high level every single time. And I think that was Teddy so far in spring. So that's who I'm going to give it to. I think we can allow there to be two for this particular award. We can have one each. But let's try and come to a consensus on our next one. And I'm going to say top three 1v9 players of 2020. And do you want me to give you mine first this time? Or would you like to go first?
Go ahead.
All right. So I'm going to go with Keen. And then Viper. And then Lahenz.
Okay.
They're my 1v9 players.
I think. I guess aiming and then hybrid and then
Oh, yeah.
aiming hybrid. And then I would say Lehens or Summit. If that if the title of the award is like you're trying to drag your team across. Yeah,
Yeah.
I think that would probably be my top three.
So you wouldn't have Keen or Viper on your list at all?
Well, Keen, so Viper was kind of, I think Griffin in, overall was just pretty much a dumpster fire. I think actually even it was really weird. I think Viper was good. I think UCal really showed off in some of those moments. But I
I think
think that
towards the end, yeah, absolutely.
yeah, I think Griffin overall was just a complete mess. And we'll see what they do even in the promotion series. When I think of like 1v9, I think of like a player that is standing out despite everyone around him
Yeah.
really falling apart, and so or not falling apart, but having a much harder time, and I think aiming and hybrid do a really good job at that relative to their teams. Even though KT obviously stepped up a lot, I think KT stepped up a lot on the back of aiming. Very Teddy Jhenair-esque in that regard, and obviously hybrid had a lot going
Yeah.
on APK,
His second
and
half of the split was unbelievable, actually.
yeah.
Yeah.
So pretty much that, yeah. And then Summit or Lehens. Because again, it's the same criteria that I'm trying to use. Like, who has four teammates that are
I mean,
not
it's
on the
harder to
same?
argue for aiming, though, right? Because he's got Tucson, who had a decent season. He had Sowon, who
Yeah.
had a decent season as well. And Bono got our, third ranking as far as the all LCK team. So, I mean, I don't know whether necessarily he was 1v9ing every game. Even Kuro was relatively consistent in a lot of the games. But I do understand that, like, it's also about how well that player plays despite his team, right? And aiming's always been a player that has been able to go out and do that for better or worse, honestly. So I'm okay with giving aiming second or aiming first. Hybrid's an interesting one as well, because I feel like Iksu sort of fed off hybrid's energy in a lot of his games. So I felt like that was like a 2v8 a lot of the time for APK, with Iksu doing his weird and wonderful stuff and then hybrid utilizing that to get the space to carry. I thought that was actually a really cool dynamic that APK had during their season. So I feel like that's not a like 100% 1v9, whereas Keen was literally winning lanes where the rest of his team was absolutely inting, and he was still there just winning and able to carry. So it's a story that we've been telling a lot for Keen, so it doesn't necessarily stand out. Sort of understand that, but yeah, he's doing it now a third year in a row, and this is the first time we have an award for him. So I want to give it to him. That's sort of my reasoning for that one. Poor Keen. Poor Keen. All right, I
True.
don't know whether we're going to come to a consensus on this one. So let's just have a top six, and you guys can mix and match them. And now what we've got to agree on is the four players that are going to get the Pog State award that you guys are going to vote for on Twitter at Pog State. And that should be live now. So I think hybrid has to be in there. What do you think?
Yeah, hybrid probably should be in there. I think.
Well, we
I
have
mean,
to have
well, what?
Chovy in there as well.
Yeah, Chovy has to be in there. Hybrid, Teddy, Faker, Lehens, Caria. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people that could be in there for sure.
Yeah, I think so too. I think Carrier definitely. The problem is, I don't want to put Teddy and Faker in there, because then we've got double T1. but I also want to put Chovy and Carrier in there, and then we'll have double DRX. And that makes things difficult. I also feel like we need to have a player from Gen G, like BDD maybe in there.
Yeah.
Just because they won the regular season, right? And he did have an incredible regular season despite not quite being there when it counted in the final.
Right.
But we don't want recency bias. So I kind of want to put him there as well. So maybe we can limit to one player per team, and we'll go like one player from each of our top four teams or something like that. Maybe, I don't know, man. I feel like there needs to be like, because people will have like an idea. I know you guys at home do have your idea on the player that you believe was the most impactful throughout 2020. But I'm just trying to, I want to read minds to have like the perfect top four. But we definitely agree on Chovy.
Yes.
That he has to be there. And I think we have to agree on BDD.
Yep.
As well. And then, do we think Teddy and Aiming?
For T1?
Oh, because I think Aiming also deserves a look in too. Oh, man. This is hard.
Just write Teddy, Aiming.
I mean, that actually would do it. If we had Chovy, BDD, Teddy, Aiming, then that's a player from each of our top four teams, actually.
Yeah. that would be fine, yeah. I was just typing out ideas, but that would be fine.
And in no particular order, we will put Chovy, BDD, Aiming, and Teddy in a poll for you guys. I believe the polls are limited to four different choices. So unfortunately, we can't put Hybrid in. Even though he was fantastic. So honorable mention does go to Hybrid. And I guess you can put in the comments if you're infuriated by the lack of your favorite player, which I assume. I guess we should probably have a pinned tweet. We should have a reply tweet underneath saying that it's just got Faker written there, and that's part of the poll, maybe. Maybe there just needs to be a Faker section. He did have a good season. I don't know whether it was necessarily... as like in the top four as far as being an MVP overall for the LCK. Of course, BDD already voted in as MVP of our split, and Cuz was there as our MVP of the final, but we think that it probably deserved to be Teddy, so we're going to put him on our list, and you guys can't stop us. But anyway, those are going to be your top four that you can vote for, and let us know which one your favorite is as far as taking away the MVP of the POG State, or our POG State award, or whatever we decide to call it. I think POG State Award is a good one. And so we are going to be giving one of these players the POG State Award as voted by you, because I don't think the POG State Award should be just us, because we're a community here in the POG State, and that includes you guys. So, of course, this is going to be the most important one. So we've given you the options. That's our input. And now you guys take it away. As is.
Take it away.
The way. Yes, yeah. Of course. And speaking of taking it away, this is going to bring us to roundabout the end of the episode. And LS, do you want to help us tease our next one? We're going to have a special guest to be named later, but we're going to be sort of discussing one of the interesting things that you recently went into for about 4 hours on your stream that was also then a gigantic Reddit thread that everyone was going nuts on. Do you want to sort of talk about what this is? Because, of course, now we're in sort of post-season POG State, so we get to go a little bit deeper.
There's been a few Reddit threads. Which one are you talking about?
I know, but you know the one that I'm talking about. The one about sort of League of Legends infrastructure and sort of team stagnation and things like that, and what we can do to help move things forward.
Okay.
And that big conversation that you had. And
the convo with Double Lift.
Yeah.
Yeah. League infrastructure is really weird because NA and EU, I think, are both ahead of Korea and China, in terms of team infrastructure. And
interesting.
And what I mean by that is like on hand staff and people that they actually have. And I think that there are some Korean teams that are comparable, but not all.
Okay.
To like the average NA and EU teams when it comes to certain things, and then obviously we'll probably talk about like coaching and whatnot. So Yeah, well, I guess we'll save that for the next episode because it goes back a lot to one of the things that I said in the first or the second episode of the Pog State, where there's a lot of stuff that is going on that isn't always made public, and oftentimes people have to use conjecture to talk about. But that talk was mostly pertaining to like NA and EU, but does have relevancy in Korea and in China. So we
and
can,
now,
we can delve deep.
Yeah, exactly. Time. Now we're going to be able to talk about sort of what it does mean in the LCK in reference to what we were discussing further. So a little bit more of a Korean twist on what was a largely Western discussion as far as this is concerned. I'm looking forward to it. I'm actually going to plan on like sitting back with my cup of coffee, of course, in my beautiful Pog State mug. And listen to you guys go at it, you and whoever else we decide to invite along. So make sure you guys stick around for that next episode. But for this one, it is over. So thank you so much for watching. Remember to leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and write some lovely things or not. Just leave us a review and just give it 5 stars. Give it 5 stars and say, I hated the show. It was terrible. But that doesn't matter. I mean, I'm happy to read that. I'd love to get your feedback after your 5-star review. That sounds perfect. Make sure you follow the Pog State on Twitter, as we mentioned earlier on. You'll be able to get all the links to where to gather your Pog State fix from the pinned tweet from that particular Twitter profile. I am at Atlas TV on Twitter, and this guy is at LSXYZ9. And that is going to do it for us. So thank you so much for watching and or listening. And we'll see you for the next episode of the Pog State.